Arch one eyebrow and ask, is that so? The Kate Daly Show starts now.
Every morning in SEAL training, my instructors, who at the time were all Vietnam veterans, would show up in my barracks room, and the first thing they'd do was inspect my bed. If you did it right, the corners would be square, the covers would be pulled tight, the pillow centered just under the headboard, and the extra blanket folded neatly at the foot of the rack. It was a simple task, mundane at best, but every morning we were required to make our bed to perfection. It seemed a little ridiculous at the time, particularly in light of the fact that we were aspiring to be real warriors, tough, battle-hardened SEALs. But the wisdom of this simple act has been proven to me many times over. If you make your bed every morning, you will have accomplished the first task of the day. It will give you a small sense of pride, and it will encourage you to do another task, and another, and another. And by the end of the day, that one task completed will have turned into many tasks completed. Making your bed will also reinforce the fact that the little things in life matter. If you can't do the little things right, you'll never be able to do the big things right. And if by chance you have a miserable day, you will come home to a bed that is made, that you made. And a made bed gives you encouragement that tomorrow will be better. So if you want to change the world, start off by making your bed.
Ah, I love that clip from that Admiral. Love it. Welcome to the Kate Daly Show. So glad that you are joining us again. And this is our Friday edition, which I love Fridays. Make sure you get over to the website, katedalyradio.com. And I welcome you, all of you global listeners all around the world. And that you're in for a treat, because I've got some great guests in this hour. And we're going to have a really fun subject for our Friday show. Also, make sure that you email me, Kate, at katedalyradio.com. And go to Balance of Nature, of course. Make sure you're getting that supplement. It's so good. And I'm serious. It really has been awesome. And I'm hoping you guys try it, because it is that good. It's clean. There's nothing in it. It's just dehydrated fruits and vegetables. And I haven't found a product ever this complete. This was just blowing my mind complete. They've been around for over two decades, and they have such great reviews. Balance of Nature. Go to balanceofnature.com. You can see what's in it, the vegetables, the fruits that you're going to be taking every day, and the drink stabilizes your blood sugar. It's just amazing the things it can do for the body. And I suggest that you put in the code Kate. When you put in the code Kate, you can get 25% off. Isn't that great? All right. I want to kick off this hour. This is going to be so fun. You're going to love this. Dean Sessions, you always bring such fun to this show because of universal model. And we'll talk about what that means. And I also welcome Russ Barlow as well. Dean Sessions and Russ Barlow, welcome.
Hi, Kate. How are you doing?
Good, good. Okay. Dean, you've got to describe what universal model is. I had a friend, before I ever had you on the show, because this is a return visit, say you got to check out universal model. And I want you to give the website too, so people know where to go. But universal model will just blow your mind. It's amazing.
Sure. People can go to universalmodel.com and learn all about this. That's actually the title of a book that we've been working on for over 30 years. Mm-hmm. And what we find there, it has a subtitle called A New Millennial Science.
Okay.
So this is literally a science that's to last for the next 1,000 years. Now, that doesn't sound normal. You know,
right.
In science today, they have a theory, and then all of a sudden they find out, well, no, this theory doesn't work, so they make another theory. And this is how it goes back and forth. But what we've done is gone in and analyzed all these theories, and this was all done between 1990 and 2000, over a 10-year period. We went in and looked at all the different fields of science. So we're not talking about just archaeology or biology or chemistry or physics or astronomy. We're talking all of them, because so many answers about nature come from a whole other field. For example, rocks and minerals, most of the colors that you find in them actually come from biology. They come from microbes when the rocks were made.
Hmm.
So these new discoveries that have been found and made, we take the actual scientists' observations and evaluations, and the ones that can be analyzed, this is what we've gone through. And so our book really is a complete new write-up, really, of all the sciences. And what we found is that the science that you and I went to school from, most of us don't look at it this way, but when we went to school, what we find, if you take classes in all the sciences today, mm-hmm. is that mankind came from an ape-like creature, mm-hmm. which comes from a microbe, which comes from chemicals, which comes from the Big Bang, which comes from nothing.
Yeah.
Now, Kate, I want to ask you, how much sense does that make that everything comes from nothing?
The way that that the systems, animals, plants, water, I mean, everything work, I can't imagine that all of those systems were made by a Big Bang. I can't imagine that how intricate everything is, everything. I just can't imagine that that's the truth. It just makes no sense.
That's exactly right. Something doesn't come from nothing. So
right.
People know this innately. And 99 out of 100 people we talk to, by the way, we're up in Idaho right now. We're doing a conference here tomorrow. If you go to our website, if anybody lives near Rexburg, Idaho, you're welcome to come to our conference.
Awesome.
The information is on our events page there on universalmodel.com. And so anyway, what we were trying to say here is we've gone in and analyzed all these different fields, and we've actually found a number of errors in a number of fields, mm-hmm. and this is simply why, you know, everything doesn't come from nothing. And
right.
so we have answers now for the first time of where rocks and minerals come from, for example, and how the craters got made on the moon and how the craters got made here on Earth. And it's not the answers that we learned in school.
Wow.
Some of those things you have to understand that we just build on assumptions. So somebody had a really great idea 100 mm-hmm. years ago, but they never actually tested it empirically, didn't prove it. And then we continue to build new theory upon new theory upon new theory.
And it became
somebody
fact,
needs to go
right?
back and look at the original theory mm-hmm. and question that.
Oh, I agree.
So that's the very first principle mm-hmm. of the UM, is to question everything with an open mind. And that's what we've done. And now we've had dozens of reviewers involved with this over the year, lots of other scientists and people who've been involved. And this is where our books have come up. So we have our first one, which is about 832 pages long. It's like a textbook, and it's called The Earth System.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a completely new geology that we've never seen before. And it also explains the weather. So the origin of how rocks are made and the origin of weather, where weather comes from,
mm-hmm.
right now no meteorologist can explain that. We have the answers for these things. The next volume is about as long, and that's called The Living System.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really exciting because it gets into all things that are living, even the fossils.
Hmm.
We know how fossils are made because we actually make them. So we'll have to come back to that in a little bit.
Yeah.
But we actually go through and show how fossils are made, and there's an age model that dates the whole age of everything, which we'll talk about here in just a second. And then, of course, our world history and human beings, which we spend more science on medical science, more money on medical science than any other field. And so we actually go in with several new medical discoveries. And the third volume is actually called The Universe System. So this is the one that really gets into the fundamentals, the physics, the chemistry, and the astronomy. Mm. So these three volumes combined are about 2,400 pages. There's literally 6,000 quotes from the scientists themselves. So this is from their peer-reviewed journal articles.
Mm-hmm.
This is from their websites and their books they've written. And, of course, we have a lot of new experiments that have never been seen before. So with these new observations and our experiments, plus taking the facts that they have, we've been able to actually put together a science that everybody can understand. This is not something that's complicated. This morning, we went to a Montessori school and taught a bunch of kids, and, you know, these are youngsters. These
mm-hmm.
are kids that are, you know, 6 to 12 years old, and we were able to show them how rocks are made. And, I mean, the kids get to hold in their hands. This is very simple. For example, basalt is a black rock, which is said in every geology textbook is to be the most common volcanic rock in the world.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem is that your geology professor doesn't take that piece of basalt and actually melt it like we do. So we took this hard rock, which actually is a quartz-based rock, and we melt a corner of it, and then we show it to kids, and we say, how could this rock come from a melt if this is what it looks like when it melts? And when it melts, it actually is glassy, and it's because quartz turns to glass when you melt it.
Wow.
So this is a fundamental thing that even elementary kids can understand the questions we're asking, and then we demonstrate the answers. Because basalt is not melted, it shows you it was not made from a melt. Basalt's actually being formed right now on the bottom of the ocean. And this is observed. Scientists have seen this. But so you have to have rocks in water under pressure and with the right temperature. Then you find rocks crystallizing out of water. And this is fascinating to show kids this.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. How come people haven't talked in these terms before? Why wasn't it always presented like this?
Well, it took me about 10 years to put together, going through all the different fields of science and so forth. And it's like a puzzle. Mm-hmm. What we show in our book is we got this 100-piece puzzle. And what modern science has done is taken some of the pieces and put them together. But by and large, most of them are just all over the place. And I show people these 100 pieces of a puzzle, and it's kind of scattered all there, and a couple of pieces are together, but most of them you can't see. And I say, how much sense does it make? You know, if I take the pieces away and say, okay, you put it together just like that, mm-hmm. nobody has ever said they could do it. But then when I give them the 100 pieces of puzzle and I show them a picture of what the puzzle actually looks like put together,
right.
I say, could you do this? They go, well, of course. The pieces only go together one way. And when they're all put together, what do they make? They yeah. make an image that we can all understand and comprehend. That's what true science does. So everything coming from nothing, that makes no sense.
Yeah.
But modern science has had this dark age it's been in.
And let me give you an example, Kate.
Mm-hmm.
So if you back in the 1700s, there was a big question that nobody could seem to come up with an answer, and that is, where did the heat come from that made volcanoes active?
Right.
Some proposals were there were fires underneath the earth, and there were all kinds of ideas that nobody could seem to come up with an answer. And there was a proposal, an idea made, that the earth was hot and molten on the inside, and that's where all the volcanic mm-hmm. Activity came from. And after about 50 years, they just accepted it and they believed it. And so we've come down for now the last 200 years with the idea that that's just the truth. It's that a mm-hmm. hot molten planet is making all this magma that's coming out through volcanoes.
Okay. What is it?
Mm-hmm. Today, we can actually look and see where all volcanoes occur. And we notice that almost all the volcanoes on the Earth occur on the Pacific Ring of Fire or other plate boundaries where there's enormous friction. So
oh.
frictional heat, because the plate boundaries are rubbing against each other, mm-hmm. are melting rock and causing volcanic activity from melted rock. It's not deep in the earth. It's coming out because of frictional heat on the surface. But
oh
nobody ever thought to go back
right.
and question the original.
I love this. You're in for a treat. Stay on. You got to listen to this. Dean Sessions, Rush Barlow, universalmodel.com. Be right back.
Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Kate Daly Show, and you can go to katedalyradio.com, KateDaLley.com, and I urge you to do so you can get the podcast and share them. And, of course, there'll be a podcast of this hour, of this episode as well, like there always is. And I'm so happy about that because we're taking a segue from politics for a moment to talk about science, and science affects us all, and I like to get the truth about science. And that's why I go to Dean Sessions over at Universal Model. Russ Barlow is also on with us, and I'll tell you something. There's so much to be learned here. You can go to universalmodel.com. You can order, and if you put in the two words as one word, summary audio, like summarizing, summary audio, you can get a free 3-hour audio. And I encourage you to do that because he's just got fantastic stuff that we're never going to be able to cover. I mean, even a small portion of it on the air today. We were just talking about volcanoes and you can take us from here. I just sit and I'm just fascinated. So I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say.
This is real exciting. I'm going to let Russ explain a little bit more about this.
Okay.
And I just want to mention also that summary audio code
uh-huh.
is when you go into our webpage and go to the store and look for the summary audio. There's a summary book, but it's one that has little headphones on it. And that's the one you want to click on, just like you're going to buy it and put that promo code in and you'll get it for free.
Summary audio.
We also have 15% off right now on our school because it's back to school time.
Nice.
That people can get off in there. So Go ahead, Russ.
Perfect.
So, Kate, I wanted to finish up on this.
Please.
This Halley volcano thing. So we know that friction is causing these volcanoes along plate lines, but there's also another phenomenon that we only know recently because of GPS technology, and that is that the Earth's surface goes up and down every day, twice a day, approximately 8 to 12 inches. Mm-hmm. And that's caused just because the moon pulls the crust of the Earth, just like it pulls the tides of the ocean. It's causing an earth tide. So that up and down movement is creating frictional heat in the Earth's crust.
You can Google that, actually, earth tide, if some of your listeners want to.
Right.
Perfect.
And here's an interesting article that just came out in just the last few days, and it's mm-hmm. about Jupiter's moon, Io. It's a little moon around Jupiter. It's the most geologically active moon in the entire solar system. Mm-hmm. There have been volcanoes active on that moon's surface since we first saw them almost 40 years ago. And this surface of this moon, it's kind of swings pretty close to Jupiter, and the gravitational pull of Jupiter causes the crust to go up and down 100 meters every day. That's the size of a football field that's going up and down, and it's creating so much frictional heat that it has all kinds of volcanoes. But NASA just came out recently in this article and said Io doesn't have a magma ocean like they thought it did. They realize that the friction on the crust is actually what's creating those volcanoes, just like the friction on the Earth.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But I want to turn some time over to Dean, because I kind of want to get into the meteor crater, Arizona meteor crater, the famous crater.
Okay.
Yeah, we want to talk about that, too. But I was just going to say that the interesting thing about the crust, our crust going up and down this Earth tide, is that the reason that we even know about this is because of the GPS on the satellites. They can measure down to a millimeter where the crust is moving. Now, we know it moves horizontally, okay? That's where the plate boundaries and stuff are, but there's never been any evidence. Matter of fact, they sent a team up on top of Mount Everest, mm-hmm. and in thinking that, oh, this mountain's every year going up, 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 you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And the subduction and the rising of the mountains, though, they found out is not occurring. They took the GPS up there and put their unit on the top of the mountain. Every year they measured it, and there mm-hmm. was no measurable change.
Okay.
So the only way that the Earth's crust is moving up and down is through earthquake action. That's the vertical uplift. The horizontal, okay. that's happening slowly, okay? Mm-hmm. That is happening slowly over time. But anyway, so we wanted to talk real quick about the Arizona so-called meteor crater. This is one area that we have more information on in Universal Model Volume 1 than any other book you can read in the world. We've actually surveyed 100 craters in the western United States, all the way down from Arizona and the Mexico border to California, all the way up the coast and along Idaho and Utah and in Arizona and California. All this area, we went to all these different craters. And the scientists already know that these other craters are what we call steam explosion craters.
Mm-hmm.
So these are craters that when you take 1 gallon of liquid water and turn it into steam, it now goes to 1,700 gallons of steam. This is
wow.
a tremendous pressure. And all these craters are on fault lines. And it turns out that the Arizona crater has two faults going directly through each other, making a cross in the middle of the crater.
Hmm.
These fault lines are where the heat came from. There's also, so let me go back in history a little bit here. So this was back in the early 1900s. Barringer was the individual who had bought this land. It's still in a private trust right now. And he bought the land because he thought there was this meteor down inside and they get all this iron
mm-hmm.
This chunk of iron that they were going to make all this money. So he got $600,000 in investors back in the early 1900s to go and drill down the middle of this crater thinking they're going to get this iron. And instead of hitting a rock of iron, guess what they hit?
What?
They hit white silica sand, pure sand and water.
What?
Okay, this is very important because this is what's underneath the crater is there's actually a diatreme under there. This is the unequivocal evidence that everyone has missed that proves this crater is a hydrocrater. A diatreme is a funnel-shaped crater that goes from the base of the crater all the way down to a pipe. And this pipe is where the water came up from.
Whoop. Where'd you go? Uh-oh. No! We didn't lose him, did we? Oh, no. Dean, are you there? Okay, well, hopefully he will call right back, I'm hoping anyway, we could get him back on the line, because isn't this fascinating? I'll tell you something, you know, to think that we have so many unanswered questions, that really should surprise people. I think people don't realize how much is guess, and in the past, you know, when we were learning stuff, kind of like what they've been talking about, and that is the fact that a lot of this is guesses from the past that resulted in what we think of as facts today. And so I'm so glad Dean and Russ are here to really tell the tale. I love this. Thank you. Go right ahead.
So what we were doing, and sorry we got cut off there,
that's okay.
We were talking about underneath this crater is this diatreme. And then on the diatreme, it was created by the water that was underneath the crater when it comes in contact with friction in a fault line. Matter of fact, the fault lines can have tens of thousands of degrees in there because of the millions of pounds of pressure and just 1 centimeter of movement.
Mm-hmm.
This creates melted lava that we can actually observe. We need to ask the question, how many people have ever observed magma inside the center of the Earth?
And the answer would be none.
That's
yeah,
right.
I was going to say.
So anytime that we can ask a fundamental question like that and there isn't an answer, no one ever has observed something, then we need to question it. So that's what we did. We went back and questioned how all these craters got made. And this turns out to be the same for all the craters on the Earth. We only found one crater that we actually can say is an impact crater, and that's the
Wabar crater.
Yeah, the Wabar crater in Saudi Arabia, Africa. So what we're talking about here is that particular crater actually has glass on the inside of it. It was a sand dune, and they actually found meteorites in the crater. And so this crater, actually, rocks did come from space and hit on the crater and created glass there. Now, the reason this is important is because in the laboratory, when they do high-speed tests, we have this all documented in the book. They actually found that the impactor did not only make a crater, but the entire inside of the crater turned to glass because the impactor actually vaporizes. And so the idea that there would be no glass in the Arizona crater, that's right, no glass was ever found inside the Arizona crater. And all the other craters on the Earth, the same with the craters on the moon, almost all of those are hydrocraters. There's very few that are impact, and we talk about some of them in the book, but it's very, very rare.
So get back to the Arizona crater, this idea that the Arizona crater is, it's the most studied crater in the world. It's about a mile across, and this particular crater is where one researcher went in there, and he teased out these little isotopes of lead and determined that they had deteriorated from radioactive uranium, and that's where the first date of the Earth being 4.5 billion years comes from, is the meteor crater that isn't a meteor crater.
Exactly. This is very important. So this uranium on uranium radiometric dating, they don't even use it anymore, Kate, because it's so bogus.
Oh,
okay?
My gosh. I didn't know. I realized.
Even the all the other radiocarbon dating.
So their thing is radiocarbon is carbon, but there's other radiometric dating.
Yeah.
And why this is important is that our whole foundation of the Earth's 4.5 billion year old supposed age today is based on faulty information about the crater being formed from a meteorite instead of being a hydrocrater. And if that's the case, then everything that has to do with dating based on those kind of dating methods has to be questioned.
It has to be reevaluated, and that's what we've done in the book.
Wow.
First off, we go in, we have 19 different evidences, unequivocal evidences that anyone can read there and see that the crater is not an impact crater. These are really important because you only need maybe two or three or four. We have 19. I could have put 50 in, but I just put the best ones in.
Yeah, because people always wonder, you know, how did they come up with that dating thing? Because it seems like a very, very, I mean, billions of years. How would they even know that? So I'm glad that you're tackling that.
That's a good question.
It is a good question. So what happens is radioactive uranium decays. It has a half-life of 4.5 billion years old.
Mm-hmm.
And radioactive decay is supposed to decay into lead. So uranium becomes lead over 4.5 billion years old. That's kind of a simplified explanation. And so when they found these lead isotopes in the crater, they made the jump that this came from radioactive uranium from a meteorite, and that's how they determined that the Earth had to be older than that particular, those lead isotopes in there.
And it turns out there, the one difference between this crater and other craters is there is some iron rocks found on the outside of the crater.
When he says iron rocks, he means there's pieces that we would call meteorites.
Okay.
There's actually two kinds of iron, though. And so one of the early scientists determined that if this was a meteor crater, it had to be two meteorites that hit exactly at the same time in exactly the same place, because the two metals are completely different. As if you got one metal from one part of the solar system and another from a completely different part, and somehow they came together and they hit exactly at the same place at the same time.
But one of the other evidences about these metal that you find around the crater that is that are not really meteorites, they did not come from space, is that when a large rock comes through the atmosphere, it only takes about 5 seconds for it to come through. It does not slow down. They're all traveling at least 10 kilometers per second or faster.
Wow.
And they've shown in the laboratory when these rocks actually hit, the rock itself doesn't just melt, it vaporizes. But guess how much melted rock is inside the crater? Zero. And guess how much of the meteorite melted is inside the crater? Zero.
Oh, wow.
So these rocks on the outside, I actually have one. I found one years ago, back when you could still collect some around the outside, and I took a torch to it. And when you melt the so-called meteorite that came from space, guess what it does?
What's that?
It melts into a completely different type of, it looks kind of like iron when you melt iron, okay?
Oh, okay.
It turns out to be about at 570 degrees,
okay,
you're seeing the meteorites totally change.
We're going to come right back. More with Dean and Russ when we come back. Stay with us on the Kate Daly Show.
Balance of Nature. Changing the world, one life at a time.
Scientific research has shown that many cancers and lifestyle diseases can be prevented with a diet rich in fruits and vegetables. This prevention comes from the phytochemicals in the plants. They fight against oxidants that damage the cell's DNA, causing mutations that lead to disease. In my lab, I've seen the immune response increase, I've seen your DNA repair capacity increase, and I've seen DNA protection. As a scientist, I know that Balance of Nature works.
Experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself. Receive 25% off your first preferred purchase of Balance of Nature. Plus, get a set of convenient travel bottles containing a free additional week's supply of Balance of Nature's fruits and veggies. With these discounts, you will still receive free shipping on every order. Call 800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code KATE.
Well, we're sure excited to be here with you, Kate. And I think it would be good for us to just go in and explain a little bit more. We were talking about the Arizona so-called meteor crater, how it was really a hydro crater. And what we found out is when they went and drilled down in the bottom of this, they hit water and then this pure silica. Pure silica is a white sand, clay-like looking powder.
Mm-hmm.
And this only comes from being in a hot spring type of source. In other words, the silica had to be dissolved in solution, and then these small little crystals grew out of it. Now, this is really important because this, when you have an impact crater, there's only one time it gets hit, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But this crater erupted multiple times. Not just the one major eruption, but a later on smaller eruption blew off from 800 feet below the crater. A whole section on the south bottom, south side of the crater rim is all white silica. And where did this come from? 800 feet below the crater.
And you know what's important about the silica? Silica is the important part. It's what makes quartz, but it's the most important part to understanding how petrified wood happens. So the silica from the crater is an important part of the petrified wood process. Dean, talk about petrified wood.
So for us to learn how to make fossils, it's particularly petrified wood, which is the most important fossil scientifically, because petrified wood is found in every state of the United States and every country of the world. Even up at the North Pole, there's petrified wood. So this is important to understand, how does a branch fall off a tree, land on in the ground, let's say it gets buried, okay? What's in the soil? there's always going to be microbes. And what do microbes do to wood?
They're going to break the wood down until it rots.
They deteriorate it, okay? So this is why it's just intuitive that everybody knows a piece of wood on its own just doesn't turn into a rock. And you just don't run water through it. If you read your paleontology and fossil books, they'll tell you that petrification process is just millions of years, and the water, rainwater running through the soil, and this happens. Well, this is not what happens. And you have to understand how rocks are made. We actually make rocks. And we do this in a autoclave, which is a pressurized pipe. And we put this pipe full of water inside an oven. And we put minerals that go to the bottom of it and are heated up.
And those minerals are ground up silica.
Yep, ground up silica, okay? And so what happens is at the top of the pipe, it's a little cooler. So this causes a convection current. Heat rises, goes up. And what comes out of the solution, see all the rocks that you pick up on the ground, people understand if we take a piece of salt or sugar and we put it in water, what does it do?
It dissolves.
It dissolves. Okay.
Sure.
But guess what? All rocks dissolve when you put it in water under the right pressure and temperatures.
And so it turns out that silica has to dissolve under the temperature when water is about 400 degrees Celsius. That's about over 700 degrees Fahrenheit. That's three times the boiling point of water. But it doesn't boil because it's under 14,000 PSI, 14,000 pounds per square inch. So high pressure and really hot water is what dissolves silica.
So there's really a recipe to this, but it's just like making chocolate chip cookies. Once you know the recipe, we're able to go in and reproduce this growing rocks continually. And this is all demonstrated in our first volume of Universal Model, okay? Mm-hmm. So once we were able to go in and to make quartz rock-based rocks on demand, the next thing we did is we took a little piece of tree, apple tree and a pine tree, and we put it inside our reactor, and guess what we got?
Petrified wood, 48 hours later, petrified wood.
That's right. But this took 3 years of experiments and 77 different runs.
Wow.
To get to this point. So this was a lot of work to make the first piece of known petrified wood that's no different than the piece that you'd pick up in the petrified forest in Arizona. We're actually taking a geotour, a UM geotour. Mm-hmm. If anyone's interested, you can go to umgeotours.com or on Universal Model. I think we talk about it there under our events. Mm-hmm. But you can go there and find out in October 24th through the 26th, three-day tour.
Three-day, two-night. We leave from Las Vegas, and we actually are going to go look at the Grand Canyon, how those layers are formed, and then we're going to go over to Meteor Crater and talk about all the information at Meteor Crater, and then go to Petrified Forest so you can actually see how those things work together to make petrified wood.
This is the first time ever that people can actually understand what we're talking about in geology. When you go up to the Grand Canyon and you take a tour from one of the tour guides or the park rangers there, and you ask, how did this get made? Well, what are they going to tell you?
Millions of years,
yeah, right?
Of course.
That's such a falsehood, and I'll prove it to you right now. On both sides of the Grand Canyon, all the layers match up, okay? If you brought the layers back together, they all match up. So we know it was just all one piece of land. Now, instead of there being erosion over millions of years, what happened was there was an earthquake. This was a massive fault that happened all in one day. And to prove it, what we do is we show that the largest earthquake that's ever occurred in the last 30, 40 years was in Sumatra earthquake in the Indian Ocean. Underneath the water, researchers went down there, and they found a 30-foot fault. This fault that went 30 feet created a tsunami that killed several hundred thousand people, okay? Mm-hmm. This was the largest earthquake besides one up in Alaska that happened. Anyway, when you go back to the Grand Canyon, we're talking the north crater, I mean the north side of the canyon, happens to be 1,200 feet, Kate.
Wow.
1,200 feet lower on the south side. So what happened is, you have to remember, when you go from 30 feet to 300, that's 10 times as much. And that would be like from a 9.0 to a 10.0. So we actually have about a 10.4 to get all the way up to our 1,200 feet.
A 10.4 earthquake,
which man's never experienced before. So this throws out the modern geology thing, saying the present is the key to the past. Mm-hmm. This is why they come up with the idea that it took millions and billions of years to do this. This goes all the way back in geology, and this is something that's never been proven. They haven't seen large, big earthquakes like this that made the Grand Canyon. We know the Grand Canyon did not come from erosion, because if you go down to the very bottom of the canyon, you'd have all the sediment down there in the gulf, and it's not there.
Oh, wow.
And then the other thing, and the other reason is, besides there being a little river, Colorado River, all the other canyons that come into the Grand Canyon, they're flush on top of the plateau, and they drop off vertically, and guess what?
They don't have any rivers.
There's no rivers in there. Okay, so they did not erode, okay? What they did is they cracked open. And when you fly over this, and we got a picture in the book, it shows it, and it's very profound.
So, Kate, here's something interesting, too, is that all the layers of the Grand Canyon are made up of things like sandstone or limestone, and all of those things have similarities to how petrified wood is formed and to how the crater, the sediment in the bottom of that crater, because sandstone is made up of teeny little quartz crystals that formed very rapidly all at once.
Mm-hmm.
And those layers, so it's kind of all connected. And our trip, on our tour, we're actually going to walk right up to the bottom layer of the Grand Canyon, which you can do right outside of Las Vegas. You don't even have to hike all the way down. And we're going to explain how each layer of the canyon was made and how it relates to the silica that you see in the Arizona crater. So the crater, the petrified forest, and the layers in the Grand Canyon are all the same.
Yeah, so this is real exciting because we're talking a lot about geology and stuff right now, but this all leads to all the other fields of science, because once you recognize that Arizona meteor crater was not made by a meteorite, and their 4.5 billion years was just a... it was a made-up number, okay? They can't even date that with that dating method anymore today. And we have a whole chapter on called the age model that goes in and explains all these false dating things all along and why they've never had any evidence. They tried to date with radiometric dating the rocks in like Hawaii, where different layers, as you go farther and farther down, they should have gotten older. But instead, in the original journal articles, which we went and pulled up out of the 60s, when they went and originally dated these, guess what? One rock would be 20 million years, another 200,000, another 3 million. I mean, and none of them were in order.
Mm-hmm. And all they did is they took and they averaged all of those that were from 200,000 all the way up to many millions. And they just put an average and said, okay, that's how old the volcanoes are in Hawaii.
Yeah. And so they don't work. They've never worked.
Right.
Their dating methods.
Yeah, not consistent and all different. So that you knew there was a problem because nobody could even agree on how to do it.
Yeah, so this is, we actually go into real dating methods, which the most important one is called dendrochronology. This is tree ring dating. You can take tree rings and you can overlap them from many trees, because in a forest, when they have a drought, all the rings will shrink up. Mm-hmm. And when there's a lot of water, they all expand. And so you can overlap old trees and new young trees. And they've been able to go back about 10,000 years in tree rings. And this is really important because it matches our world history model. Mm-hmm. So we go in and actually show in the world history where all these major events took place through the tree rings. Just one of the ways. We also have DNA evidence. This is really important. If some of your listeners want evidence for evolution not being correct, well, the universal model has this. It's in volume two under the evolution pseudo theory chapter. In this chapter, we show DNA evidence has actually disproved evolution. And this is just fascinating to see. For the very first time, we have on record here evolutionists standing up at their own symposium stating that we have failed at the task that Darwin set out for us to do. And that task was to take the tree of life and to prove it. And they've never been able to show one species turning to another species, either in the laboratory or in the field. And so this is a real important thing when you start to realize each of these fields of science where they have these theories that have never been documented. And that's what we've done. We've spent so many years going through all the documentation and have found that the millions and billions of years doesn't work. Without that time, there is no evolution either.
And that's where it seems like we're jumping around a lot. It's because every single thing is connected to every other thing.
Yeah.
So the age that came from the Arizona crater affects the age of the Grand Canyon, which affects the age and the theories behind evolution. And the way all of it is so connected that you start, it's like you pull a thread and the whole thing starts to unravel. And that's what we found. And that's so all these years, it kind of led from one to another until the whole thing starts to unravel. But it also starts to reveal to us the way that it is. And it's so much simpler than the complicated way science presents it.
Yes, exactly. And that is the most important part, is when you have the truth, the hard questions are easy, Kate, when you know the answer.
Yeah, because if you're working on that kind of stuff, I mean, all the holes make it more complicated. Yeah. Wow.
Exactly. And it is, we don't need quantum mechanics. We don't need complicated physics theories to figure out the universe. We actually, in Volume 3, have found the correct models for both the atom and energy. For the very first time, we can explain clearly and simply why energy is both a matter and a wave, why it's a particle and a wave. Nobody's ever been able to explain this before. This is coming up in Volume 3, which we haven't published yet. Mm-hmm. But just to give the listeners a little idea that we go into all the science fields. We question everything with an open mind. And once you do that, now you're open. See, we're privately funded, so we didn't have to go to university or get government funds to do all this work. This work has all been privately funded, and this has allowed us to be unbiased, meaning we can go in, and whatever's correct, we accept that. And correct, by correct, we mean it has a scientific method that is observable. By the way, one last thing I need to make sure we get out here is the universal model has new natural laws. Never before in the last 100 years can you name one new natural law in modern science?
Wow.
There isn't one. There's not one. Yeah, and that's because their endpoints of science today are theories. That's their quotes, National Science Foundation.
Yeah, they've literally changed it. They don't want to find law anymore. They base everything on theory.
Exactly. So we have gone in, and the first volume has over a dozen theories. The second volume has about a dozen, natural laws. And the third volume has over two dozen natural laws. So these natural laws now, you can take them, you can find new technology with them. You can find all kinds of things in nature that you never knew about existed before. And that's the exciting thing about the UM, is you will look at the world completely different when you have a chance to look and read through this.
It's simple.
Yeah. Anybody, you can be a housewife or an engineer, anybody can understand it.
Right. I love this. Dean Sessions, Russ Barlow, thank you. UniversalModel.com, UniversalModel.com. Get the volumes and also summary audio. Summary audio if you want to get that free 3 hours. You guys are amazing. Thank you so much. I got to go, but thank you so much, Kate.
It's
I appreciate you.
Can't wait
till they come back. That's awesome. And everybody be faithful, be fearless. Have a fantastic weekend.